This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A big switch could be coming for two West Virginia power plants.
West Virginia is in a pretty enviable position here. When you switch from coal to natural gas in a power plant, you reduce your emissions between 50 and 60%.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The legislature met Monday in a special session. Typically, bills are read on three different days. However, the Senate suspended rules and passed six budgetary bills that the House of Delegates sent over the course of the day. Those bills have now passed both chambers and head to the governor's desk. The Senate held off on two bills from the House, one regarding nuclear waste and the other on military spending. The legislature introduced a bill that would reduce the state's income tax by 5%. That bill will be considered on Sunday when the legislature returns. Senate leadership has said it is still not sure the state can afford a reduction in tax. A bill that would provide tax relief for child care centers and parents will also be considered on Sunday. Regarding that bill on nuclear waste, that's House Bill 208. Keelan Bailey reports it passed with the smallest margin of 73 yeas out of 91 votes cast.
HB 208 would make West Virginia an agreement state with the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission. This means the state's health department, instead of the federal government, would manage nuclear waste. However, while seven other bills passed with little to no discussion, the chamber discussed HB 208 for about 40 minutes. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle expressed concern. Governor Jim Justice had not discussed the bill during press conferences leading up to the session. Some lawmakers said they received the proposed laws for the special session on Sunday night. Typically, a bill goes through a three-day process in each chamber so that legislators have time to vet the bills. Most bills also go through a committee review. This bill did not. Delegate Todd Longenacre, a Republican from Greenbrier County, spoke against the bill.
I want to see nuclear power come to West Virginia. I have to make a decision on behalf of my constituents back home, who's probably just as confused right now.
Lawmakers expressed concern about the bill opening up West Virginia to out-of-state nuclear waste storage and corporate projects. Delegate Bill Anderson, a Republican from Wood County, rebuked concerns and spoke in favor of the bill.
I can assure you that as chair of the Energy Committee and Manufacturing Committee of this state, I'll have no part in opening large-scale nuclear waste disposal facilities in this state, period.
The Senate did not consider HB 208. Both chambers will meet again during pre-scheduled interim meetings on Sunday to continue the special session and the remaining bills. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Keelan Bailey.
One of the bills being considered during the special session would allow charter schools to apply for state funding. Chris Schultz has more.
Charter school advocates have long said a lack of startup funds makes it difficult for brick-and-mortar charter schools to open in the state. During a brief meeting Monday, the House Education Committee discussed House Bill 227, which would authorize a public charter school to apply to the state school building authority for funding to purchase a building. Minority Chair Mike Pushkin, a Democrat from Kanawha County, voiced his opposition to the proposal.
To me, this is further privatization of public funds. It sets them up to take away more public funding from our public schools for everybody's kids.
Vice Chair Joe Statler, a Republican from Monongalia County, pointed out that the legislature already appropriated $5 million that could go towards funding public charter school building purchases if the school building authority votes on it. House Bill 227 was approved 12-6 and now goes to the full House. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
More than 200 people gathered in Shepherdstown over the weekend for a film festival highlighting rural LGBTQ stories. Jack Walker reports.
films at the 10th annual Appalachian Queer Film Festival stretched across genres. There was a documentary on the first transgender state lawmaker in Montana, A Will They Won't They, depicting two college students in Ohio, and a short film about parties hosted by trans women in Pennsylvania.
We really try to make sure that we have a broad selection and also have films that are going to be relevant and speak to the vast, like, diversity of the queer experience, queer and trans experience. So we want to make sure that everyone feels like they have a voice at the table.
That's TJ West, a member of the festival's planning committee. He said the festival also wants to show viewers experiences that they may not be aware of.
There's a whole gay world out there that they can experience.
Chastity Yoakum directed a short film called Longing for the Unfound. Set in Kentucky, it follows the story of a queer couple that's drifting apart. Aptly enough, the film was shot at a lake. Yoakum said shooting outdoors linked the LGBTQ narrative to the natural world.
It was just like that sort of dirty grittiness that you only experience when you're like a kid going out and playing and you're like, oh, I found something really cool.
Austin Lewis's film Wild Man follows the story of a trans woman whose estranged father claims to have shot Bigfoot. Lewis felt proud to screen the film in a festival centered around the LGBTQ experience.
To have someone see it fresh and have it really, have them have such a strong emotional reaction, I mean, makes me have an emotional reaction, you know?
Details about next year's festival have not yet been announced, but you can find more information online at AppalachianQueerFilmFest.com. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Areas of fog this morning, mostly cloudy skies today. Chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 60s and 70s. Scattered rain tonight, lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness with rain and thunderstorms early, highs in the 60s and 70s. Support for WVPB is provided by the West Virginia State Treasurer's Office with a Smart 529 program, recognizing West Virginia's teachers through the Above and Beyond Project. More at WVTreasury.com. Appalachian Power may have something different in mind for two of its West Virginia power plants besides burning coal. Curtis Tate has the story.
Appalachian Power is at least considering a conversion of two West Virginia power plants from coal to natural gas. That's what a company executive told the Virginia State Corporation Commission in recent written testimony. The John Amos and Mountaineer plants in West Virginia supply power to Appalachian Power's Virginia customers and burn a lot of coal produced in the region. But the region also produces a large amount of natural gas, which has become the preferred fuel for generating electricity nationwide and in the states surrounding West Virginia. And new federal regulations for carbon dioxide emissions could encourage the switch. Robert Jesse, Appalachian Power's vice president of generating assets, told the Virginia Commission in August that gas was a viable option to help the plants meet new U.S. Environmental Protection Agency emissions requirements should they survive legal challenges. As recently as 2021, the West Virginia Public Service Commission had approved other environmental compliance upgrades that would keep them operating through 2040 as coal plants. In addition to regulatory changes, the economics of generating electricity have shifted in favor of natural gas and renewables and away from coal. Seth Feaster, an energy analyst for the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, says such conversions are common and not difficult to do.
These kinds of conversions have been done all over the place, and they're common enough that I think that it's not a big reach for this plant or these both of the plants to actually get that done in a relatively short period of time once they get approval.
No plant in West Virginia has been converted from coal to gas, but it has happened in nearby states and within the territory of American Electric Power, Appalachian Power's parent company. That includes the Big Sandy plant in eastern Kentucky and the Clinch River plant in Virginia. The West Virginia PSC approved the Clinch River conversion in 2014. Charlotte Lane, chairman of the West Virginia PSC, said her three-member commission had not been advised by Appalachian Power that a conversion was under consideration for the Amos and Mountaineer plants. Lane said the company would need the commission's approval for a conversion of the plants. Karen Wissing, an Appalachian Power spokeswoman, said the company, quote, continues to look for the most efficient options to power progress and business growth. That may or may not involve converting coal plants to natural gas, she said. One sure opponent of any attempt to convert the plants, West Virginia's coal industry. The state remains the nation's second leading coal producer after Wyoming, and its power plants are still a big customer. The coal industry has deep historical and cultural resonance in the state, and many elected officials are committed to its survival. Governor Jim Justice amassed his wealth in the coal business and has been one of its biggest defenders. Chris Hamilton, president of the West Virginia Coal Association, said his organization had not been made aware of Appalachian Power's Virginia testimony. He said the proposal would have negative economic consequences for the state's coal-producing areas. The industry and its allies have made a steady pitch for coal's reliability. If you always have a supply ready on site, the plants can run when they're needed. Gas, on the other hand, is supplied by pipeline and could be vulnerable to disruptions. Yet thanks to hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, West Virginia has an abundant supply. It is the nation's fourth leading producer, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration.
West Virginia is in a pretty enviable position here.
That's Rob Jennings, Vice President of Natural Gas Markets for the American Petroleum Institute.
And so you've got the gas you need right there.
Helping meet emissions requirements works in favor of gas, Jennings said.
When you switch from coal to natural gas in a power plant, you reduce your emissions by about 60%, between 50 and 60%, depending on the efficiency of the coal plant and the efficiency of the new gas plant. So that's really the biggest benefit.
In addition to cutting carbon emissions, gas plants produce no sulfur dioxide, which can form acid rain and must be removed with devices called scrubbers. Gas emits less nitrogen oxide, which forms smog, and it avoids the disposal costs of coal ash, which can contaminate groundwater if not handled properly. Gas, though, still emits carbon dioxide. The production and transportation of gas emits methane, an even more powerful planet-warming gas than CO2. Gas as a substitute for coal generates some opposition where coal has a lot of support, Jennings said.
But I think the larger place where you tend to see resistance to this is from the environmental side.
If EPA's rules prevail, existing coal and new natural gas plants will have to capture 90% of their CO2 emissions within a decade, or shut down. Environmental groups would prefer to see Appalachian Power's coal plants retired and replaced with renewables like wind and solar and battery storage. Sooner or later, the company will have to make a decision on the future of its West Virginia coal fleet. Appalachian Power's West Virginia coal plants, which include Amos, Mountaineer, and the Mitchell plant, half owned by Kentucky Power and Wheeling Power, have operated less than half the time in recent months and have lost money when they did run. Appalachian Power executives testified to the West Virginia PSC over the summer that the plants had too much coal on site, so it was burned to manage the supply, even when it was not economically justified. The plants are aging, and that increases the cost of operating and maintaining them. Mountaineer began operating in 1980, and Amos and Mitchell in the early 1970s. Electricity rates, meanwhile, have been on the rise. In August, Appalachian Power asked the West Virginia PSC to increase them 17% for residential customers, or about $28 a month. The PSC dismissed the case on a technical issue, but heard an outcry from residents and elected officials.
You may want to support the coal industry in the state, but if it's going to raise costs for ratepayers, then it starts to become an increasingly challenging proposition to come up with the money that supports keeping it a coal plant.
Feaster says the plants might be at a tipping point where it becomes more attractive to run them on gas instead of a fuel long associated with the state. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Keelan Bailey, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.